of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Don't label us left or right.
We are American.
Not looking for a war, but we came to fight.
We are American.
Somebody's gotta stand up.
Stand up.
Somebody's gotta do what's right. We're rising cause we're fed up. Got our house in order and got yours in sight.
American, that's what I am, that's what I think, and what I do. I am American, that's what I am, and I bleed red, white, and blue. And I bleed red, white, and blue.
It's not about it's about what's right.
We are American.
Taking back our country, come and join the fight.
We are American.
Somebody's gotta stand up.
Stand up.
Somebody's gotta do what's right. We're rising cause we're fed up. Got a house in order and got yours inside.
I am American, that's what I am, that's what I think, and what I do. I am American, that's what I am, and I bleed red, white, and blue. And I bleed
you, welcome back. Yeah, all right, my friends, welcome back to the broadcast. You are listening to Eric the Freedom Screamer on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Thanks for joining us here on Resurrect the Republic. We're trying to get her done. When you hear that patriot rock and roll, you know Lori Anderson's got something to do with it. She's going to be with us tonight, along with John Lamb, with updates on the Bundy trial in Las Vegas. We're going to have Gary and Chris sitting with us as well. We appreciate you joining us tonight. Please support the network. This is the only place you're going to get in-depth, one of the very few, at least as far as the radio broadcasting in this situation, that you're going to get anything to do with the Bundy trial. Once again, all the other outfits are talking about, guess what? Sex scandal. Sex scandal. Sex, 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 sex. Gross. I don't care about the, it's a total diversion. We got the trial of the century going on here. We got some really important stuff going down. And what do we get? Sex scandal, sex scandal, sex scandal, sex scandal. Yeah, puh. With that, we're going to bring in Lori, Gary, Chris, and John Lamb. Let's go with Lori and John first, and then we'll bring in Gary and Chris because John's time is precious. We appreciate you being with us tonight. Lori and John, how are you guys tonight?
Doing well. Hello, everyone. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really good.
Good evening, Lori.
Yep.
Well, everyone, I want to say this. I am not even going to hold back on this. We need to hear from John. Some really amazing things have happened in the last 2 days. Yesterday in the evening part, which we did not get to report on because I didn't have that update until after the show. And of course, the stuff that is going on today. So John, if you would now remember, I covered yesterday morning, just in case you didn't know, I covered your report from yesterday morning, but the huge surprise, the phenomenal news, and you know what I'm talking about, that happened after lunch, if you will, the listeners do not know about.
We're on the Republic in there.
So
yes,
if you could,
yes,
please.
Yes, I tell you what, yesterday just shows you how fast things can change down here. We get these big surprises, and it even surprises us in the courtroom. We have this same witness, Mr. Petrie, on the stand for the last 3 days now. And what's so amazing, this Mr. Petrie, he's an attorney.
that works for the BLM litigating cases against the citizens of the United States. And he was the one who went after Cliven Bundy and tried to impound the cows there and litigated for several years against him. Last night, before the last couple of hours of court, Ryan Bundy got a chance to cross-examine this witness for the first time in over 2 days there. Oh, Mr. wonderful. Bundy got up there, and the first thing he did is started asking, he said, you know, I understand you're an attorney. Did you take an oath to uphold the Constitution? And that's where the door got open. He said, yes, I did. I took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States. And he asked him, he says, well, do you know what the Constitution says? Can you tell me anything in the Constitution? The guy was actually silent. This is a 35-year seasoned federal attorney that's been working for the federal government for 35 years. He took an oath to something he did not even know what it said. So Ryan Bundy pulled out a Constitution. He says, may I approach the witness, Your Honor? And she said, yes. He said, I want you to read out of this Constitution what you took an oath to uphold. And for 2.5 hours, we went over the Constitution, and the whole courtroom got a full constitutional education, even the jurors. The first time in 2 years, we could not believe what we're hearing. I was sitting back there. I was almost scared for Ryan. I'm thinking they're going to object. Right. They're going to shut him up. They're going to try everything.
Or U.S. Marshals might tase him. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, anything could happen. There wasn't a single objection in 2.5 hours.
Ryan, so what was the look on the prosecution's face at that point?
The prosecution, they were literally steaming over there. They had their hands in their face. They were making faces. They were shaking their heads at each other. You could tell they were mad. But there was nothing they could do. He stayed within the confines of the court order. He did exactly what he was supposed to do, and he asked that witness different questions concerning what the Constitution meant on certain aspects of the land issues, such as Section 1.
Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17.
Section 8, yes.
Got into some serious detail there.
Oh, there was. And, you know, here's an attorney. This guy's qualified, technically, by the court to answer these questions. He's an attorney. He should know these answers, and he answered them. They went through step by step, and he says, well, how does the federal government, how are they allowed to own land then if the Constitution says they can't? Mm-hmm. And this attorney says, because they have the power just to do whatever they want, is pretty much what he said.
Oh, wow. Now, I have a question for you.
Yes,
I have a question for you, John. Is this the same witness that said that the federal government doesn't have to obey the Constitution?
Exactly.
Is this the same witness?
Same witness. He says we don't have to obey by state law. We don't have to obey the Constitution. Mm-hmm. If we come into a state, we just choose to get the state to work with us, but we don't have to.
Okay, so here's another quick question. I hope you got my text today.
I got it with a bunch. I haven't looked over them all yet, but I did get it.
Okay. Well, what you said that this gentleman admitted he took an oath to the Constitution, right?
Yes.
So he took his oath. He is obviously, because he's an attorney, he is considered, quote unquote, an officer of the court, if you will. So Article 6, Section 2, I'm wondering, did Ryan bring up Article 6, Section 2 or Article 6, Section 3 of the Constitution? Because, and I want to just read this. I know you probably know what this is, but I'm going to read it for the listeners. Article 6, Section 2 of the Constitution states, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof. And if you're wondering in pursuance to what, it's in pursuance to Articles of Confederation. If you read Article 6, Section 1, you will understand that. And all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding, the senators and representatives before mentioned and members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any oath, to any office or public trust under the United States. So the reason I'm asking, if he brought up Article 6, Section 2 and Article 6, Section 3, is because this man took an oath. He admitted he took that oath. He is part of the federal government. And what backs Article 6, Section 2 up, of course, is 18 U.S. Code 241 and 18 U.S. Code 242. And that is, if two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right, it doesn't say privilege, everybody, it says of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, or if two or more persons go in disguise on the highway or on a premises of another with the intent to prevent or hinder his free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege so secured, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. And if death results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years, or for life, or both, or may be sentenced to death. That sounds to me pretty serious, that the federal government can't just do what they want, even though they have been doing it. What do you think about that, John?
Well, that was read in court, and I totally agree there. And this attorney was dumbfounded. He didn't really know how to answer all these questions. And Ryan just kept telling him, well, if you can't answer it, I understand. Just answer to the best of your knowledge. You understand
right.
This is something you took an oath to. Even went as far to say, did your oath expire? He asked him that.
Right.
And he says, well, to think of it, I don't think it has. And that's when Ryan said, you mean you have violated that oath? You know, if it hasn't expired and you're to uphold the Constitution, you haven't been doing that in my father's case, he said.
Mm-hmm.
And then this witness would say, well, we differ in opinions on this. He said, well, the Constitution is an opinion. It's what it is.
Correct.
It's just
it's
amazing.
Law.
Yes, it is. It came out today after that 2.5 hours yesterday that Ryan Bundy spent doing that. These jurors started having tons of questions about this. They wanted to know what this Constitution was. They don't even know. So they had
God
questions.
Love them.
Yes, and they wanted
something about the truth.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Public fool.
They wanted us to explain it.
Yeah,
good.
The public fool. The public fool system has been doing its job perfectly in creating dumbed down people who have no idea what freedom, liberty, Constitution, they know none of it, and of course the Department of Education under the Goldman Trump administration is continuing to do the same thing with their STEM initiative, pumping little children full of computers and putting them in little slots that have nothing to do with actual learning.
So what happened?
Exactly.
So what happened? Go ahead.
I'd be happy to volunteer to purchase copies of the Citizens Rule Book to provide constitutions to all the jury members, and even one for the attorney, if they like.
Absolutely. Well, everyone needs to know it, you know? And the thing is, now their interest is sparked. So now they're going to want to learn it for themselves. And do you know how a brush fire starts?
Well,
with
you
one
know,
little
I got an
flame.
Idea. Here's an
one
idea.
Little
Ryan
flame.
Ryan Bundy could make a motion that says, due to the fact, the recent
mm-hmm.
turn of events, that the Constitution has been so explained and gone over in such detail, and because further questions are pending from the jurors, who I would like to present, make sure each juror has a copy of the Constitution, and you know, this third party would be happy to offer a pocket Constitution for each one of the jurors. I'm not under any illusions the judge is going to say go for it, but you never know, and it'd be interesting just to at least try it. Wouldn't hurt.
Well, you know daggone well they're going to go start looking that up when they go home. If they're really curious, they're gonna find it. So what else happened today?
I'll probably be winding up at the RBN network. Go ahead.
So what else happened today, John? What was the new updates for today?
So today we went back in, and the prosecution last night leaving, they were dead silent. There was nothing. We just all went home. And this morning, the first thing the prosecution did is attack this line of questioning that Mr. Bundy, Ryan Bundy, did yesterday. And they called it a collateral attack on the on the prosecution. They said this line of testimony or line of questioning that Mr. Bundy did was a total collateral attack on us as the prosecutors. They said this is going to cause jury nullification.
They opened the door. And now, wait a minute. He's a hostile witness.
Yeah, that's right. It's a hostile witness that the government brought in on their own. These are paid government employees.
Well, the witches. Oh, my God.
But the judge amazingly ruled in Ryan Bundy's favor. She said, I don't agree with you. I think it shows this year. She actually asked Ryan Bundy, you know, why should I, you know, let this continue, or what's your reasoning? She said, well, Your Honor, it goes to the heart of this whole case. It's about the Constitution. It's our state of mind that we are here.
And if he was delicate and fragile enough to do this, he could say, even you as well, Your Honor, have taken an oath to uphold this Constitution yourself. So I see no problem with the court approving my motion to pass a pocket to give a dozen pocket constitutions through the bailiff to the jurors. Bingo. Give it a shot.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Article 6, Section 2 also confirms it. They're bound
before
by it. Even Navarro
with,
is.
I wouldn't be surprised. I bet you Ryan Bundy, before this case is over, I bet he attempts to try to give them 12 pocket constitutions. I wouldn't put it past him.
He may want to do it with file a piece of paper as well. Of course, he's going to have to put it in writing. But real brief, yes. Just I would like to, you know, yeah, it could be done real simple, and I don't think it would take a lot of sweat. There's very little downside. It'd be interesting to see what happens. Throw it at the wall, see what it sticks, you know, use all the tools in the box.
Well, exactly. Also, you could use it as to ensure that you are being tried by a jury of your peers. They have to understand the Constitution. Thus, that would be a good reason to provide them with one. Now, there's also some amazing news I believe it was yesterday when this happened. So I kind of need to revert back real quick so that everybody gets the amazing news. What did Judge Navarro do that shocked everybody for Ryan Bundy?
After all this happened, this court was just dead silent. And so nothing happened. This is after the Constitution had been went over for 2.5 hours. The first thing she says once the jurors leave the room is she says, while you were cross-examining this witness, Mr. Bundy, I went and I contacted via email your pretrial release officers. And I went a little bit further, and I got you permission to go home and spend Thanksgiving with your family. And she said, I even went one step further for Ryan Bundy, because he's in this
house. Ryan was in a halfway house. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she got him permission to go to his family's house tomorrow for Thanksgiving. And so she said, but I even went a little step further, because I've seen your good faith here and what you're doing. I don't want to see you driving home or somebody giving you a ride home this couple of hours away from Las Vegas, you know, on a Thanksgiving night when there might be people out drinking. I want you to stay home with your family and not come back till Friday. So that
is
was a
that
big move.
Not awesome news, everyone?
The heart of the witch is softened.
God is moving. This is God.
Yes. all the credit goes to the creator. Absolutely, that's true. But I think on top of that, I think some of the higher witches and bishops have been maybe whispering, hey, go easy, because the Patriots are starting to freak out, and it's really making Trump look bad, and they're not going to get forth their warmongering agenda overseas if it's obvious that they're scooping up all the Patriots at home, just like pre-World War II Nazi Germany.
Exactly,
well,
yes.
I know that, you know, no matter what the ulterior is, the ultimate truth of the fact is, God's in control.
It's coming out. Yes, it's coming out a little bit by little bit.
And I liken it today a little bit. Yeah, finish telling us about today, John, please.
Yeah, I liken what happened today a little bit like in Egypt when Moses and Aaron went back to Egypt in front of Pharaoh, and they had these musicians or sorcerer-type people that brought their staffs out, and they was going to do some tricks, and they threw their staffs down, and they all come, you know, become serpents and snakes. Well, Aaron or Moses threw their staff down, and it devoured all their snakes, all their staff.
Yeah,
that's what happened today. Everything the prosecution tried, they was getting, it was backfiring on them, and it became useful for the defense team over and over again. And even Mr. Whipple said today, he says, I would like to first off thank Mr. Sheesh, the prosecutor here, for making our argument for us. He says the exact words what he
said. Oh, he did not. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, he said, I would like to thank Mr. Sheesh, the prosecutor, for making our argument for us. We couldn't have made a better argument than the prosecution saying what they just said. And he said, for them to hide this information from you, the jurors, shows that there's more truth in this case that they don't want you to see. The prosecution has been squirming because yesterday morning, first thing, we've got a 15-page document called a threat assessment, a new one that we had not seen. We've been asking for this since April of last year. So it's gone almost, you know, 10 months or 9 months, whatever it has been, we've been asking for this document. The defense team knows it exists. Prosecution has denied it ever existed. Well, yesterday morning they gave us a 15-page threat assessment that just came about, but they filed something with the judge requesting that it stayed secret, sealed. The jurors can't know about it. The defense got this new discovery, but they don't want nobody to know about it. So we can talk about it, but only in general. You can't talk about what's in it. And you can ask witnesses questions about it if they recognize it or have seen it before, but still the jurors are not allowed to see it. And then the day they gave some more lost discovery, some emails that we've been trying to get from Dan Love. And it just, just happens that they just found them now after 2 years later. These emails are slowly popping up. We've asked for this discovery for a long time. And they have denied us over and over again by claiming they don't have it. And it just keeps showing up.
As much as this looks like as that little part there looks like kind of a hit against, you know, against the accused, against the defense, ultimately, even though it looks bad, those little things about being denied, the jury's going to see right through it. The jury does not like to be told, you can't see this. I'm sorry, that's not for your concern. You little children, scoot off to the corner and let us adults work that out behind the bar, bench, whatever, in the back room, smoke-filled room deal, right? And I would, so, you know what I'm saying, John?
Yes, exactly. One thing that was really interesting, because we're wanting to bring this out. We've got this court order, you know, we can't really bring it out publicly without violating it. So Mr. Whipple got up there and he says, tells the witness, you got a 15-page document in front of you, don't you? And he said, yes. He said, well, the judge has given me an order that I can't talk about to the jurors. What
the jury's not going to like that. I think the jury's going to be...
Hold on, Eric.
That,
hold on, Eric.
They want to know.
This gets better.
Don't like it at all.
Good.
That's right. Well, he says, I can't tell you what the document says, but you can read it for yourself. But he said, for the purpose of the jurors, so they know what we're talking about, we're going to call this document the nasty list. He says like that. It's the nasty list that we can't talk about. Oh, man, the prosecution got really upset. And they said, Your Honor, why don't you just call it what it is? And the judge turns it to him, well, you all are the ones that made the motions to keep it secret. So this is getting told in front of the jurors. And it, the cat got out of the bag. So finally they said, okay, we'll call it what it is. It's a threat assessment. But the threat assessment that should be able to be used against the Bundys, but for some reason there's no threat in this threat assessment that's been missing, and it contradicts what the prosecution has been saying all along, that the Bundys were
the threatless. The threatless, the threatless assessment.
The threatless
now,
assessment.
John,
and what's so, yes?
Is that the threat assessment, the FBI threat assessment you're referring to, or are you referring to the one that has no date and no known place of origin?
Yeah, this is a BLM. This is another one we didn't even know about. So there's a FBI threat assessment that says there's no threat. Then there's a BLM threat assessment that was supposed to be all along. What actually the BLM says how dangerous these guys are. But with the day we found out, this threat assessment says it was only minimal to moderate. There were, that's the threat assessment. It wasn't high. And then we found out something even more interesting, that the only name mentioned in this threat assessment was Cliven Bundy. They've used this threat assessment against all the other defendants, saying that the BLMs that are so dangerous, we've got to keep them in jail. We found out today this threat assessment was used against all defendants, keeping them in jail for the last 2 years when there was actually no threat.
Now, here's another question. Does it have in there for the BLM threat assessment who the actual person or people were that actually did that assessment?
It does. It has all their names, and they're trying to keep those out of court, too. They don't want these names made public. We've had just bits and pieces of hints out of that today and yesterday, just a little bit. But the public, it's all talked in general. They're afraid to mention these names. They'll mention on line 27, page 3, there's an officer there, or line 40, you know, like that. There's another BLM officer. And what did that officer, can you read it? But don't read it out loud, that kind of thing. And that's how they've been bringing it about.
Well, the reason I was wondering is because I'm wondering if these quote-unquote people who wrote the assessment, if and when eventually the names are eventually going to come out, I'm sure. But if and when it comes out, right, I'm wondering if there's direct ties to the Southern Poverty Law Center or the Urania One Clinton Foundation poll spider web that's going on there. I'm really curious about that. I bet there's
a material question.
The government's hiding. Yes.
Or Harry Reid.
And the jury sees all this, and I think every time there's a condescending remark to the jury, you can't see this. Oh, line such. Every time a reference to that comes up, they're going to be like chomping at the bit to know what's in it again, and they're going to get so disgusted and sick of it, they're going to say, you know, the government stinks, the witches' court's corrupt, and you know what? I'm not going to send these guys to prison for any witches, for these not witches and Nazis. No way. I think it's going to play right into the hands, even though it looks bad on the surface. Some of it, I think all of it, even the hits that Ryan and company are taking, are still going to leave a sour taste. The government's leaving a very sour taste in the jury's mind with all this restrictive. You follow me?
This is Gary Dunn. Eric, Chris is trying to get in to ask a question.
Yeah, Chris, you got a quick question for John Lamb before we go to the break?
Well, John, I know you have the ear of the attorneys Whipple and others there on the defense team. This so-called threat assessment should be challenged under Federal Rule of Evidence 702 for efficacy. After the break, I'll finish up if you like.
Yeah, hold that thought. Okay. Federal Rule 702. Let's look that up and research that over the break. We'll be right back after a brief word from our
expert witness.
Jerry, Chris, Gary, and John Lamb. We will be right back on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Mm-hmm. Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Try not to get worried, try not to turn on to problems that upset you. Everything's alright, yes, everything's fine.
Welcome back, my friends. We're going to get right back into it. We got John Lamb, his time is precious. We also have Laurie Anderson, Chris, and Gary as well for commentary. I just a brief recap. We got relatively good news coming in from the trial. Very good news to me, Ryan. I mean, this is huge. Actually, this is epic. The C word came out in court. The Constitution, and several hours were spent discussing the Constitution in the court, and also the N word got out. Nullification, that got out of the bag, and that was this. And also, Ryan Bundy is allowed to leave the halfway house and go home for Thanksgiving with his family. The same courtesy should be extended to Clive and Bundy and the rest of them, but at least one's better than none. Chris, finish up your comments briefly on Rule 702, Federal Rule of Procedure 702, which may apply to this case, and then right back to John Lamb quickly.
Federal Rule of Evidence 702 has to do with qualification of the evidentiary value of an expert witness, like one who might do a threat assessment, supposedly. However, you also mentioned several things that in there that operate on this, but 702 says in order to be evidentiary in the federal courts, it must meet the test of the three-pronged test called the Daubert, D-A-U-B-E-R-T, analysis for observability, measurability, and repeatability. And if it doesn't meet all three prongs and it fails the test, then it becomes hearsay under the federal rule and not admissible. Also, in the same thing, you're talking about these vague and ambiguous references to unnamed individuals, which are anonymous individuals, which are also under the hearsay rule because they haven't defined them with any specificity where they can be ascertained who it was and what they contribute and can't be cross-examined. Also, they're using doctrine of voida for vague when they use broad, vague, ambiguous general terms that don't have specificity for the least sophisticated individual to be able to make a reasonable discernment as to what they did or what they supposedly did to violate whenever they use those vague terms.
Excellent point, John.
It is, yes. Some of this redacted stuff that came out of this that the government's trying to keep out from the ears of the jurors, we got bits and pieces up at the day, and we got some of it when the jurors were left in the room. One of them, in this 15-page report and this other email, proves that the United States prosecutors, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Interior were there on the ground days before this impoundment even began. Why were members of this prosecution team there? We've got one of the prosecutors sitting at the table every day. Her name is Nadia Ahmed. She worked for the Department of Interior as an attorney, as a federal attorney, back in 2012, 13, and 14. She was there, and now she's prosecuting the case.
Did they have a warrant?
Did we lose John, or did we lose me?
No warrant. No warrant was ever issued. There was a court order.
Check Mike on the board.
That was it. Just a court order to impound cows, not to kill cows, not to damage water lines or destroy other property of the Bundy.
Now,
just a court order to impound. That was it.
Sounds like they set it up from the beginning.
Question. Do
it
you
definitely
know
does. It sounds like a case of entrapment, at the very least, part of it. And they were setting it up. Why were these members of the prosecution that is prosecuting the case also litigating a civil case, setting this case up from the beginning? They even asked that attorney that was on the stand, Mr. Petrie, did you ever think this case would be prosecuted in the future? Did you plan on this? He said, well, I had it in the back of my mind that we would someday be prosecuting this case. If they had that in the back of their mind, they knew that, then this was set up from the very beginning.
Set up from the get-go, they wanted to steal the land and sell it to foreign interests. Lori, back to you.
Well, John, I have another question on that. Do you know if they've put in a motion to for Nadia Ahmed to now be amended and be put on the witness list? Do you know if that has been a thought?
That has actually. We talked about this briefly later. I think I even talked with you about it. And so I put it in the ears of the defense team. And this morning, the defense stood up, one of them did, and said, hey, we need to amend our witness list in light of new evidence and new light of new witnesses that have been here. And the judge didn't want to hear it. She said, just give it to me in writing. But they have added her name to it. It hasn't been 100% approved by the court yet, but her name is on that list.
Awesome. That's
so
good.
There's
good
some big
news.
Things happening. Yeah, big things are going to happen in a few days.
Wow.
We are not going to have any court tomorrow, of course, because of Thanksgiving. Nothing on Friday and Saturday and Sunday. So we have the next 4 days off. Coming back Monday, we will be back in court all of next week, Monday through Thursday. Wednesday is another big day here. We have set aside a half a day Wednesday just to argue these different motions and discovery that's come to light. We also have to argue a dismissal of this case on Wednesday.
Who put out the dismissal motion?
What's that? Well, the dismissal motions were actually put out by Ryan Payne's attorney, but all of the defendants have joined in with that dismissal.
Okay, so it's one motion, but because it was Ryan Payne's attorney that did it, but all of them are joining in the motion to dismiss, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I know I don't know the details of all the motions just yet, but I do know that it's because of of a lot of this misconduct of the prosecution and how they have failed to give all this discovery until last minute, and we've actually asked for this discovery for months, and they're just giving it. And one thing that is pushing this dismissal forward even faster is Mr. Whipple today asked the prosecution, he said, you just handed me a 15-page threat assessment. I want you to tell me what's in that threat assessment. Have you even read it yourself? And Mr. Sheese admitted that he had not even read it himself, and he asked the judge, Your Honor, will you give me 15 minutes right now so I can read it? And she said no. Prosecution throwing a piece of paper down, gave it to the defense and said, here's some new discovery. We found a little bit more. Throwing a bone at the defense team, but he hadn't even looked at it. He don't even know what it says in there.
Well, you know, subliminally and like an oral communications type of thing, the way that I read that, if that witness had not read it yet, and this is just going off of what I've been taught with oral communications and things like that. That doesn't mean what I'm saying is accurate, but this person admitted they didn't read it. That's a sign that that person knew from the get-go that that's not a real threat assessment, that 15-page document that wasn't dated and that has no place of origin, by the way, that just so happened to pop up conveniently, was just done, just created, and just put out there as bait. Now, that is just an observation, of course, that is not based on anything that I can prove or any kind of fact. That is just that type of with oral communications and with him admitting that he had not read, you know, that documentation. And it's supposedly one of the reasons that they're so dangerous and this, that, and the other. And his whole case is based upon this. He would absolutely read that if he thought it was legitimate.
So let me get this right, John. The defense, the prosecution, right, kind of out of last minute now in the middle of the trial out of nowhere, throws a threat assessment at the defense, and the defense asks for a little time to read it, and the judge says no?
Well, it was actually the prosecution.
It was the prosecution.
The prosecutor, Daniel Sheese, the one main prosecutor that's helping handle this case right now, one of the three, he's the one that gave it to the defense, but he hasn't read it himself. So he ended up with this, out of the blue, he ended up with this threat assessment that's been missing. And then he brought it to court, said, here's your missing discovery you've been asking for.
Well, right in the middle of the trial. Says,
right in the middle of the trial, and the defense comes back and says, well, what does it say? You tell me what it says. Does it include Ammon Bundy, Ryan Bundy, and Ryan Payne in this threat assessment? And he says, of course it does. Well, and Mr. Whipple says, well, then you haven't read it because it doesn't include their name. I just read it myself. It doesn't say it. You show me where it says it. And then Mr. Sheesh comes back and he says, well, I'll find it. Well, he couldn't find it. It's not in there. And then that's when Mr. Whipple said, this was outside the presence of the jurors at this point.
Okay. And that's too bad.
But Mr. Whipple comes back and he says, you obviously haven't read it. You gave me something you don't even know where it came from, and mm-hmm. it just came out of the blue, he said. He said, you obviously haven't read it. So then Mr. Sheesh asked the judge for 15 minutes to read it, and she told him no.
Mr. Sheesh under oath when he lied to Mr. Whipple the first time before Mr. Whipple caught him in the lie? Was he under oath at that time?
He wasn't because he's a prosecutor. Everybody just
taking but
his
he's
word.
Still an officer. Yeah. But he's still an officer of the court. He's bound to sworn not even out of the bounds
That's
of that
true.
Trial. No, it still applies. Yeah, Lori's. I know where Lori's going with that, and she's exactly right. That's a great question, Lori. But no, he was under oath immediately at the time for that trial or not, he's still under his oath as a sworn officer of the court to not commit to not bring perjured. Information either by commission or omission, meaning holding stuff back.
That's exactly right.
I have another salient point of technicality, if you're interested.
Sure.
Well,
in order for the judge to have issued the seizure warrant for the cattle, there would have had to been a complaint by an injured party. Maybe the government might have claimed they would, but the government is probably not a competent witness because they have financial, fiduciary, and other self-interest in the outcome of the case. They failed a test for neutrality, and therefore they couldn't be a witness under the hearsay rule. Further, if there was no competent first-party injured witness or victim of property or personal injury, then they could not have had an affiant that was competent to issue an affidavit under the federal rules of process under 4M and service and the rules of evidence. You must have an affidavit to support from an independent third party that's actually suffered an injury or witnessed the crime to make out the affidavit to support the issuance of the warrant for the seizure or the arrest. Absent that, the judge didn't have authority to issue it.
And that's, interestingly enough, that's where police are usually stuck at a traffic stop, because they're bound to have a sworn, and they even had to, they have a clause on tickets in New York that says you are entitled to a further, what do they call it, deposition in furtherance of this. Anyway, it requires two parties to be at any traffic stop, and if you hold them to it, the cops are going to have to, they have to start showing up in pairs around here in upstate New York, because people were constantly holding them to, hey, where's the sworn, the supporting deposition? That's the word I was looking for. Where you have to have two people at least swearing evidence of a crime, and by the way, the crime has to show a real victim, not some fictitious entity like the state of Nevada or the United States Corporation. So, but it sounds like it's going real good. John, continue, please.
Go ahead, Lori. Yeah, so that pretty much wraps up our day here. We wrapped it up there at the end. This witness was relieved. We finished up with them. The jurors had 9 questions all total from all 16 jurors with those 4 alternatives. We had 9 jury questions. And they had some good questions in it, and it gave us more insight on what they're thinking. And we know that this case right now.
What kind of questions are they asking?
The questions they were asking is they were trying. The first question from the first juror was, "What are the amendments and what do they mean? These amendments that they read out of the Constitution." And so again, that witness read Article 1, Section 8, and then Article 4, and the 10th Amendment was read again by this witness trying to explain what Ryan Bundy was meaning, but saying that it was his interpretation. They wanted to put their 2 cents worth in. And I can go over all these just briefly if you'd like me to here.
Sure, absolutely.
Some of them are pretty interesting. They another juror wanted to know about the water rights in Nevada. What goes with these water rights? If you own water rights, do you get grazing rights with them? Or is it just water rights, and how do you use it? Do you water cattle with them? Do you water your garden? You know, how can you use these water rights? And the witness just brought up the United States versus Hage case and the United States versus Hunter. And said that the Ninth Circuit District Court disagrees with the Bundy theory that any rights go with water rights. The only right you have is just the water, and that's it, and nothing goes with it. I don't think they answered the juror question right. So they're kind of leaving these vague things that the jurors are like, what did you just say there? I don't even understand it. Another question was, when the BLM offered to sell the cows, would Mr. Bundy receive the same amount of money as if he would have sold them himself? And the judge would not allow that witness to answer that question.
Because they know they would see the government's ripping people off and not giving them fair market value.
Well, yes. John, also remember, just a heads up to the attorneys, and I'm sure they know this, but you're there, so you can send this message. On the jurors that are asking about the 10th Amendment and the other things, and 9th Amendment when you're talking about the state's rights, please remember Prince v. the United States It's 1997 case of Sheriff Mack took on the United States government, and it very much in there talks about the duality of the state and the sheriffs not having to bow down to the federal government, and he won that case.
Yes, that's exactly right. I'll bring that up.
But the sheriff in this case, Lombardo, is a basket case, and he's not going to do anything for freedom. Am I wrong?
Yeah, they're not
Chris should know about that one.
Yes, exactly. Another juror question that the jurors gleaned from this 15-page document that was read from a little bit or questioned from, but talked vaguely about, was in this threat assessment, there was the word minimal restraint that was used by the witness, and that's about all they said. And so one of the jurors wanted to know, what did that mean, minimal restraint, when you said that out of this document? You know, they don't know what the document is yet, so they're trying to guess at it.
What does it mean? I think it sounds to me like it means cut loose. What does it mean to you guys?
Yeah, well, we learned that it meant that the BLM, when they was out there to impound, they only had authority to use minimal restraint, minimal as possible to impound cows. And they went far and beyond that by killing cows, damaging property such as water lines, and other things like that.
So it should have been minimal force or maximum restraint. They kind of did an oxymoron there, but I get the drift. I got you.
Yeah, that was the word that the juror asked exactly.
Because,
that
I mean,
way.
Think minimal about restraint. It. Now, this is why words, think about it, though. If you say minimal restraint, that means don't restrain yourself, cut loose, and kick ass. To me, that's a dangerous...
That's right.
But I don't think they meant it that way. Am I getting that right? They meant minimal force, maximum restraint, minimal jurisdictional authority you have, so you don't hurt too many people. Is that what they meant? But they used kind of the wrong words.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Okay.
That same juror had another question, and some of their questions are a little hard to understand, but they asked the cases, when the impoundment was taking place, was there an appeal? Did Clive and Bundy have an appeal in effect at that time? And that wasn't answered at that time. After these questions were done, Mr. Whipple got up and he said he wanted to ask this witness one more question about this appeal or litigations against the BLM, and he asked, isn't it true that at this very time there's still civil actions that Mr. Bundy is fighting? And the prosecution, they was very upset about that question. They didn't want the jurors to know there's still litigation going on. Clive and Bundy just recently filed a new suit against the BLM in court in the Ninth Circuit. So there's still, besides this criminal case, he's still fighting for his rights on this land.
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposed to be kept a secret from the jurors.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I see more evidence.
I believe
I see more opportunity.
Roger
even
Reeks.
I was just going to say real quick, Lori, and then back to you. Even if this goes bad and there was a conviction, I see more grounds for overturn on appeal than I have in any other case. And if nothing else, boy, this is really waking people up. Everybody can see how corrupt the government really is. It's just all over the place. I can't remember a case like this where there was so much blatant in-your-face evidence of government and court corruption.
That's right. The two last questions are very interesting here, because these two last questions, the judge would not allow anyone to answer it. She actually answered them herself and refused to let any witnesses or attorneys answer it. But this juror, one juror says, how far does Mr. Bundy's water rights extend? Like the whole Gold Butte area, or further to Lake Mead, or how far do these water rights go? The judge said, I need to answer this. I'm not allowing anyone else to answer it. She said, it hasn't yet been proven if Mr. Bundy actually owns any water rights. And I don't think we'll ever know that. That was a total lie. She stepped in, answered the question when she knows that Mr. Bundy owns water rights with the state of Nevada. He has he has paperwork to prove it. But here she tells them it isn't actually known that Mr. Bundy owns any water rights, and we don't know if we'll ever know that. And the second or the last question, yes?
I was going to say one little correction. This case that was filed on Bundy's behalf by Larry Klayman was in the First Circuit, D.C. Circuit. To get it out of this corrupt Western District Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals area to put it to a more neutral ground. And it's a very well-written complaint that you can find on, I think it's freedomwatch.com and larryklayman.com are his two sites now. He used to be with Judicial Watch.
Excellent. Yeah, great point, Chris.
He's been showing up over there, and he's also fighting, and he's also done helping with a lawsuit with the OIG, as well as
Larry's doing that
on behalf of Clive and Bundy because Jeff Sessions refused to do an investigation into the prosecutorial misconduct.
Exactly. So he's also on that too. And John, what was the last question
in the courtroom almost every day? That last question.
Oh, good.
One of the jurors wanted to know. What was the cost of the grazing permit if Mr. Bundy would have paid it? The judge still would not allow anyone else to answer it. She said, this is not for you, the jurors, to know or question. It's not any part of this case, and you are to dismiss the thought of even thinking of it. She's even ordering them not to concern themselves with any of that. And that was the last question of the day.
Go back to your room. Children, don't question the witch. Go ahead, Lori.
Going back to the grazing permit issue, though, the funny thing was, and I don't remember who did it on the stand, John, you'll be able to help me out with this one, but there was one of the witnesses, I believe it was the first witness, that testified that there was no environmental damage whatsoever by Clive and Bundy's cattle when he had the permit. It was only after the permit was not obtained did they start saying that there was environmental damage, correct?
That's exactly right. That was Mary Rudwell. She's our first witness that the government brought in. And she actually said that right under oath that, no, there was actually no damage done at all. And they wasn't even looking for damage. They weren't even concerned about damage until he decided to withdraw from this BLM-type grazing permit and pay it to the state of Nevada only. Then they started doing their assessment. Then they started looking for damage and declaring that this desert forest was being endangered because of the cows, and the cows were overgrazing.
Right.
Yeah, hang on, John. Stay with us for one more segment after the top of the hour. Yeah, what they're doing is they're claiming that any evidence of use on the land is damage, and that could qualify as anything, a hiking trail. We'll be right back after the top of the hour break. I do hear the music, I believe. So stay with us, Eric, with John Lamb, Lori Anderson, Gary, Chris, and everybody out there. Thanks for joining us. It's the Republic Broadcasting Network. Don't forget to support the network. If you want to get the real breakdown of the Bundy trial, this is excellent. I'm learning as much as you are, and this is a real blessing. Stay with us. Right back after this break.
I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.